Welcome to the RBC podcast. My name is Matthias Kleins, and today we will be talking to Professor Joe Brownlee about blue tongue virus, a virus that can cause a devastating disease in ruminants. In last week's episode, we have learned from our guest Joe Valuni that blue tongue disease is a non-contagious disease of ruminants caused by a virus which is transmitted between cattle and sheep only via insect vectors. When infected with blue tongue virus after a midge bite, animals show severe respiratory symptoms and lameness, and up to a third of affected animals may die. The complex mechanism by which the disease spreads, involving midges as a vector and potential reservoir, means that once the disease is present in a geographic area, it becomes endemic. As a result, vaccination is the only effective way to contain blue tongue. In today's episode, Professor Joe Brownlee, an expert on blue tongue at the Royal Veterinary College, will tell us how exactly blue tongue virus causes disease in the host species, and how long it will take until the veterinary and farming community will be able to protect their livestock with an effective vaccine. Joe, you have been working in the field of blue tongue virus disease for a number of years. And one of the questions that people often want to know about blue tongue disease is, which cell types are infected by the virus? How does the virus get into those cell types? And what does the virus actually do to damage those cells? Could you give us an answer to that question?
Yes, I think what is particularly interesting about blue tongue, as with several other viruses that have insect vectors, is that this is a virus that's got to infect both mammalian cells and insect cells, and blue tongue certainly does that. What we do know is there's a series of different serotypes, 24 altogether, and that all of them have this ability to enter the mammalian cell, often causing quite severe damage to the cell itself. It's cytopathic, it'll kill the cells, and yet when it enters the insect cells, it is non-cytopathic, so it doesn't kill the cells, and really that's why we get quite a extensive damage in mammals, sheep, cattle, but we don't get those in the insect, which is a great pity. It would be much more convenient for us if it was the other way around.
Because then there would probably be no cycling of the virus between those species.
Well, that's right. What it does do is it's an RNA virus, it's an ORBE virus. It enters, it goes to the pathogen-type pathway, and there it uncoats. It goes through the normal process of transcription and translation, in which they get new virion particles that are budded off. You get new virions multiplying at great rate in the mammalian cells.
So it's the destruction which is caused by the virus to the mammalian cell just a reflection of a higher reproductive rate of the virus in the cell, or are there completely different mechanisms? Are there things which are specific about mammalian cells as opposed to insect cells which make them susceptible to the killing, to the cytopathic effect of the virus?
I'm not sure we fully understand that. And I'm not sure that we fully understand the pathway in insects. But certainly in the mammalian cells, it targets the endoplasmic reticulum. And through that pathway, it can cause quite severe damage.
So simply the protein synthesis pathways of mammalian cells,
yes,
are severely disrupted, and the livelihood of the cell is completely destroyed.
Yeah, and within not a long period of time, you find in cell culture that you've got a cytopathic effect.
Mm-hmm.
So it kills the cells.
But the problem with those viral diseases, of course, is that there are very, very few ways of directly treating it. So we don't have very many antiviral drugs which would be able to fight a disease like that. So most likely vaccines will be the most successful strategy to try and overcome the problem of blue tongue disease in the long run, especially now that it seems to be established in Europe. What type of vaccines are there momentarily in the pipeline, and what are the strategies in terms of producing new vaccines to blue tongue virus?
Well, as we've mentioned a moment ago, there are 24 serotypes of the vaccine, and the very definition of being a serotype is that they are serologically different from each other, and so you need a vaccine for each one.
That's a big problem in the first place. So there are no multivalent vaccines available?
No, there are multivalent vaccines, and in several countries where the disease is endemic, they use multivalent vaccines. And so in the Mediterranean, where you've got types 2, 4, 9, 16, 12, 16, you know, they will be using multivariant vaccines against those types.
In that situation only means it's a concoction of vaccines.
That's correct.
Yes. So.
Absolutely correct. But for Northern Europe and for the UK now, we don't have the strains that are in those type of vaccines because BT8 is really predominantly found in Nigeria. And in that country where it's so endemic, they don't, in fact, even use vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
And commercially, there hasn't been a profitable reason, sadly, for developing a BT8 vaccine. But you must understand that the vaccines come in two different forms around the world. They can be live attenuated or they can be killed vaccines. The killed ones tend to be purified virion that is then chemically inactivated. The live viral vaccines can be highly effective, but they're used where you've got endemic disease. And so there's a level in the population of immunity where you can use these live, modified live vaccines. There is a problem with them in that there's a very narrow line between vaccinating with a live virus and actually infecting with a live virus. And there have been some notable cases of clinical disease following vaccination with live virus. And so Northern Europe and UK will be very nervous about using a live vaccine. And so where we're now moving to is a killed vaccine. And so that's what's been looked at for BT8. So it's not that BT8 has, we haven't been thinking about it or making a vaccine. It's because we're actually asking to make a different type of vaccine. And there wasn't a push to do it before. Whereas the other serotypes that I've mentioned, there are already vaccines. Now in South Africa, they use, or in Southern African states, they use a series of live viral vaccines, sort of cocktails, that are dictated by the prevalence of the virus strain that's in those countries.
So the great advantage of the live virus is that it possibly induces long-standing immunity, is that right?
Yeah, that's quite right.
But they're problematic because there is, for example, the danger that they might revert to being pathological. Is that the case?
Yes, I think if there's a level of immunity in the animals, then a live viral vaccine gives you a really strong boost that gives you, for the length of most livestock,
mm-hmm.
you know, a lifelong immunity. And so they're highly efficacious. Where we are with the killed vaccines is that they don't give you such long immunity and you have to repeat it frequently. And it would be an interesting question to what will happen in this country, even if we do have a vaccine. And we were discussing the other evening with the students, who would pay for the vaccine, who would insist on using it, how would it be delivered? And these are questions that, if you have an endemic disease, it's often a problem that industry are responsible for delivering the vaccination. If it's a notifiable disease, then the government through DEFRA and DEFRA officers will deliver the vaccine. And we've seen that in the past where we've had diseases we wanted to get rid of. In the early days against TB and Brucella, we had government vaccines that were used widely for an endemic disease to lower the load so much that we could then finally go into a program of culling and eradicating the disease. What will happen in the future with blue tongue is very interesting. Many people, including me, with the knowledge in the field, are very nervous about the fact that it really is already endemic and will become endemic. And the only way forward will be by trying to protect your livestock. But that in itself won't stop the vaccine in its tracks because it will still be able to move through the vector. And you might have wildlife vector hosts as well for it, and ruminants, deer. And vaccines very often will reduce the clinical infection, but would not prevent it altogether, and certainly will prevent the clinical signs. So you still have productivity in your livestock, but you might not totally reduce the infection level.
So at the moment, we're waiting for the BTV8 vaccine to be finally produced, and hopefully that will be available for next year's insect season. Is that right?
That's what we're hoping. What we do know at the moment is that Germany and France have ordered 30 to 40 million doses of the vaccine. We haven't actually put an order in yet. And so there will be a queuing because there are only a limited number of vaccine manufacturers that are engaged in making this vaccine. Mm-hmm. We will be needing that sort of number of doses. In the UK, we have possibly the highest density of sheep. In North Europe, we have 20 million that order. And during the lambing season, of course, we will be having close on 40 million. And so these are susceptible animals that we will have to consider quite carefully how we protect them. And if coming back to the question we've mentioned earlier, is it going to be the responsibility of farmers? Because some farmers will say, it doesn't pay me to do it. Or other farmers will vaccinate just a proportion of their stock. So we want to have a clear view about the use of the vaccine and when we stop using it. And hopefully we're going to get some for next year, but there is still some uncertainty whether the demands for the vaccine will leave us without a full capacity for delivering all vaccines to people who need it.
Do you think that the vaccine is essentially more important in countries like the United Kingdom at the moment, where the sheep population is much more pronounced than compared, for example, a country like Germany, where predominantly dairy farms are probably going to be supplied with the vaccines, especially in the light of the fact that the BTV8 strain, which has emerged in Europe recently, seems to actually cause much more severe clinical signs in cattle as well, as opposed to all the bluetongue disease strains which were known beforehand?
Yes, I think it is. It has been a different type of outbreak to the one we've used to, but really in the first year, 2006, we did see it in cattle. Perhaps midges prefer cattle, and it's easier for a midge to get into cattle. But in the second year, this year here, 2007, they've seen much more in sheep. And so it's reverted to how we know about the pathogenesis of blue tongue. And I think that's all we might well see next year, that we've seen some in sheep and some in cattle. But next year, if it repeats what's happened in Northern Europe, we're going to see a great increase in the number of cases. And people mustn't be over-secure that they think that the vectors are just in the southeast of England. Pirbright have done some work on leaving out insect traps, and I think out of 100 traps, 99 have had vectors, Culicoides obsoletus, mm-hmm. In over 90% of the traps. It's quite widespread, and even the Scottish midge has an ability to be infected by blue tongue. So it could spread and it could go wider. So we'll have to see what happens next year.
One of the other big questions, which is probably out there, especially with the new outbreak being ever so slightly different from the ones we've seen before, is the question of susceptibility, both for different species, such as cattle and sheep, but also within species between different strains. Because, for example, certain sheep breeds seem to be less susceptible to blue tongue disease than others. Do we know anything about the mechanism of this? Do we know what determines susceptibility to blue tongue virus?
No, I don't think we know the genetics of it. But I'm sure we don't know the genetics of it. What we do see in some countries is that blue tongue, where it's been endemic for some period of time, doesn't cause the severe outbreak that we're seeing now in Northern Europe and we possibly might see in the UK. I think that's more a reflection on the level of immunity in those breeds. I don't think any of the English or the European breeds are any more resistant. It might be some of the African breeds might be more resistant, but of course they have a different productivity, a different need, and I can't see English farmers turning to those breeds, the African breeds, readily. I think the way forward has to be not so much the breeding with these less productive breeds, more to do with immunising with better vaccines, really.
So in your eyes, there probably will not be an approach like in Scrapie where people were trying to understand what the genetics of resistance is and potentially trying to breed sheep breeds which are actually resistant to Scrapie.
I think that people will be quite cautious. I mean, already we've seen non-typical Scrapie coming through in the breeds that were said to be resistant. So I think resistance to a virus disease is pretty complex. I'm sure the way forward, certainly in the short and even in the medium term, will be to find ways of delivering vaccines more effectively, more cheaply, and possibly the longer duration of immunity. But there are some vaccines that are highly efficacious. The Rinderpest would be a very good example. But that reflects not so much vaccine technology, it's more to do with the virus itself. The virus in Rinderpest is not a variable virus. There seems to be one strain. It's an acute infection where you can readily vaccinate against. There's good immunity to active infection, and there's no vector involved. So with blue tongue, we've got a whole range of different questions, and makes it much more difficult to control.
So if you were to devise a strategy how to fight blue tongue disease in the next year, in an ideal case, you were to set the goals for blue tongue.
Well, first of all, let me say that the DEFRA have thought about it. They do actually have a contingency plan that you can look at on their DEFRA website. So they have been thinking about this. There's little doubt that we won't have a massive culling operation. It will be accepted as an endemic disease.
Which means culling is not an option to fight
it. It's not really an option because you will find that you just can't control it. And there is some rationale for culling the first few animals in an area or in a region because they do act as a reservoir for the midges. But once the midges have been infected, they're very rapidly spread it around. And so
it's very hard to contain the
disease. Absolutely. So I think the only way there are biosecurity guidelines using fly spray, not very proven, not proven to be very effective. Bring your animals in the evening, not very convenient for sheep owners. It's not even particularly evident that midges don't go indoors anyway. So I think that you're just going to have to wait to see whether the vaccine is produced, and perhaps we reduce the amount of movement of sheep. Again, very difficult in the UK. Our whole industry depends on movement of sheep. At the moment, they've got a huge biosecurity area and protection zone, 150 miles now. It's huge. It's most of England, apart from Wales and the West Country and Scotland. I mean, it's a huge area where they've declared the disease, to some degree, potentially endemic. And so they could be moving with those, but not outside of those areas. And next year, if we find it moves outside those areas, we will accept it as endemic throughout the country.
And in that case, probably all movement restrictions would go anyway because they're pointless and they...
That's right.
Okay. Well, thank you, Joe, for this information and giving us such a great insight in the state of the art in blue tongue research and blue tongue disease.
Thank you. I mean, I think it's a disease which... it's going to be a high priority, and it's so interesting to somebody who's been in the field for a number of years to think that if we tried to lecture our students on blue tongue a few years back, they would say, don't tell us about another disease, it's not important. And just because of the global movement of animals and animal products and people, and now with the impact of environmental change, including climate change, we are seeing diseases moving around the world, and so it's so important that we have a good understanding that new diseases will arise. And students who are going to be qualifying now will definitely see diseases we hadn't anticipated in 15, 20 years' time.
To emerge in Europe again. If they've been here before, if they're not completely new to the continent in the first place.
That's right. And the talk a few years back that we might get blue tongue was ridiculed by a number of people, but here we are, we've got it. And there's a whole lot of other viral diseases out there knocking on the door to move, which might or might not move, but we've really got to be aware of that potential.
So it should keep you busy even past retirement.
That way. And keep a lot of other people busy until retirement.
That's it from us for today. Please join us again in 2 weeks when Professor Katharina Stark will explain the role of insect vectors in the spread of blue tongue. This episode again will be available from the Royal Veterinary College webpage, But if you want to make sure you won't miss any episodes in the future, then subscribe to the RVC podcast on iTunes. Goodbye.